If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Well, good evening from downtown Green Bay. I am Chris Elfheim. Welcome back to The Rational Revolution. I am here with my friend, DePere Alderman, known as my favorite red man.
You can go with that.
It works
with my native blood, too.
I don't need to go there. But Dean Rash is here with me, my favorite person to banter about. We just came on the air giggling about odd facts, and I asked him what his least favorite accent was. Well, your answer was...
I don't have one.
I don't know.
I think I like all of them.
I especially like
the southern accent when it's, you know, you're at a restaurant.
The drawl?
Yeah.
One time I worked up in a restaurant way up north, northern Wisconsin, when I was in college. They were building some type of pipeline. And all the pipe workers from down south, they would come into the restaurant that I worked at in the morning. And I got called honey, sugar, darling more times.
That's the part I like. They might be calling me a bad name, but then I started out with, hey, sugar.
It was like, when you're holding the fresh pot of coffee and it's 6 a.m. and they want one, all is good. All is good. My least favorite accent is actually the Australian and New Zealand accents. I don't know why, but it's like an earworm. I can't handle it. Everything else I like.
That's really odd. I'm just saying.
I like words. Do you have a favorite word?
I can't say them on the air.
Really? No, like a sound of a word? Text us, by the way, on the app if I'm the only one that has. I like words. I like the word murmur.
Murmur's kind of cool unless you have one.
Murmur.
Yeah.
And quagmire. I really enjoy the word quagmire. And accoutrement.
We're kind of going into a quagmire here right now, this conversation.
Well, we're just kind of pointing out that we're imperfect people and we have odd, strange likes. But if my error is that I like words, I don't know what
I just preferred not to air mine on the air tonight.
Okay. So tonight, we are happy to be here. Do download that Civic Media app. If you want to text us, we are looking at a computer screen and we can tell if you're texting in. I know our friend from Appleton will be on, Jim.
Yes.
Jim's always there.
And I like Jim because he called me a gentleman that one time.
Well, I know. Maybe he was drinking. I don't know.
I hope not. I want it to be sincere.
All right. So tonight, and as everybody knows in the show, our goal is to have a rational conversation. The show's name is Rational Revolution because we want to be able to get back to having conversations from differing viewpoints and learning from one another different thoughts, maybe a little bit of empathy for different perspectives. We don't always agree.
Nope.
But we don't get mean, we don't get nasty, we just have a conversation and let the listeners gather from that what they may.
But just for a point, we do sit on very opposite ends of the table here too, just in case.
Literally, Conrad can validate.
Yes.
And we never veer.
I'm on the right and you're on the left.
Am I?
Yes.
Well, sure enough.
Hang on a second. Oh yeah, there it is, the L on the back of that hand.
Sure enough. All right, so coming in tonight, the normal pattern of my show is that I do not prepare the conversation necessarily, and I certainly don't tell the guests what we're going to talk about because that makes it more fun. Again, our goal is not a presentation, but a conversation. So today, I gave Dean an option of two things.
Yep, one or B.
I said one or B. One, we could talk about Ronald Reagan and Reaganomics and taxes, and B, we could talk about alcohol in Wisconsin and how we feel about that. And Dean, drumroll please, you chose.
I chose the most exciting topic of the two, taxes and Reaganomics.
Does anybody surprised that he picked Reagan? Anyone? Raise your hand. No. Bueller? No. Okay,
so
fine.
Just so you know.
It's like a T-ball for you.
My pickup truck is named Dutch.
Oh, isn't that something?
And that was Reagan's nickname when he played football.
Wow.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. Did you know there's a large statue of Ronald Reagan in Nina? Is it Nina or Menasha? Nina?
Is it really?
Yeah. There's also a small Statue of Liberty. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but they're
interesting.
There. Before my time.
Well, you want to take them down?
No. All right. So let's talk about Reagan. Now, the reason I want to bring up Reagan is I'm a believer that many people have opinions, some strongly on every topic or every individual. And my goal in these conversations is to find that every action has both a potentially both a positive and a negative consequence. So by looking at them in that manner, we can try and see what may have been good and what may have been a negative from that. So we're talking a long time ago, but Reagan was kind of the beginning of the new economic model that we run right now. Most people refer to it as Reaganomics or trickle down, which technically it's not really trickle down, but we're not going to get that crazy into it. So my friend in the red, please describe to the people why you are such a fan of Ronald Reagan in 1 minute. Oh, Jim's already on the board. That away, Jim. I can always count on you. All right. So 1 minute. So let's not ramble too much, but tell us why, in your opinion, Reagan is admired by so many on the right.
Well, I think it goes beyond the Reaganomics side of it. I think Reagan was admired for a couple of things. Part of it was what he did to change the world, and with him helping to bring down
the wall,
mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. having Gorbachev tear down the wall, as he said so emphatically that one time. I think he was at in Germany. He was in Berlin and made that speech, and that came down. So in essence, it started to end the Cold War. Changed the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe by far. I think that was one of the great things he did. He started, from a conservative side of it, he started some of the deregulation. Now, how did that, it impacted air traffic controllers back in the day when he went after that union there, which caused some problems, but I think in the end it had some positives with it as well. But then when we look at the taxation side of it, because this is the conversation we have about taxes, I think the conversation there, when he took office, the tax rates were extraordinarily high in some groups. I mean, just massive.
Which groups?
The top 1% that everybody wants to bash. And I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we talked about this a little bit before, I think as high as 75% in some cases.
Yep.
And that's ridiculous.
That's horrible.
That is absolutely horrible. And so putting some sort of change to that, I think, was beneficial. But at the same time, he also tied that into not only just reshaping the tax code, but also the spending, controlling the spending. So,
all right. So, time out. So, let me just summarize. So, you believe that the biggest things that Reagan is known and admired for are lowering the taxes, ending the Cold War, and basically busting a union for the good of the people.
Those are a couple of things. Sure. Okay. That's what's coming to mind right now. Because remember, I can't prepare ahead of time.
I know it. So conversation-wise. All right. So first, have anybody ever read up on Gorbachev when he was in charge?
He was more of a progressive in terms of what the Soviet Union was.
Right. And I'm not taking any credit away from the fact that the Cold War
these two came together at the right time.
Right. And the reason that Gorbachev came into those talks, and if you've done any looking into that or watched any documentaries, you'll know that they were financially, as a country, falling apart.
And we were the reason for that.
Because they were spending the bulk of their money by far on what?
Military.
Military.
And we forced them into that.
Well, that's the game that was being played.
Correct.
Right?
Knew we could handle it. They couldn't.
Well, I think that let's just remember the point. You had a major, major country, actually many multiple countries all involved,
right.
And the reason they had, because they didn't have enough to take care of their people. They had housing issues, they had food issues, they had education issues, and they had no money to spend on their own people because they were so busy in a gridlock Cold War with another superpower.
Right.
So I think there is something to take out of that in terms of where should the focus of a country be. And I think we could definitely expand on that, right? So I don't think that we should necessarily give all the credit to Reagan making something happen, as opposed to it was a game of chicken.
It was.
And the consequence of that game were the lives of the people.
And I will say, having read Reagan's book that talked about him, it was a risk he was willing to take to bring peace and kind of take away those threats, and it worked in our favor, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's just, it's an important conversation to have in there. It wasn't just one-sided. Next, we talked about, I'm going to skip on the union thing for a little bit because we can come back, but the next one had to do with the tax brackets.
Yep.
Now, the tax brackets, you're right. I mean, tax brackets were, the top tax bracket was 70%. It was massive.
It was.
Absolutely massive. And he rolled out this concept of trickle down, which is you loosen up the cash flow on the top of the hill and it should run down and everybody should find success in that. Would you agree with all the stats and the information and the research done at this point that the trickle down concept really did not work the way that he had intended it to?
I'm going to hedge because, of course, otherwise, how could we have a conversation? We just agreed, then the show's over. So what I'm going to say is there's nothing perfect about anything we've ever put in place.
Oh, it's true.
And again, this is one of those as well. I do believe dollars were opened up for investment. I do agree with that. I do agree that spending probably increased a little bit, not government spending, but personal spending because they had more money in their pocket. So those things, in essence, help to spur economic growth because you've got more people buying. Carver Boats was a big beneficiary when they made changes like that, the people who had the money.
Yeah, me and my neighbors both went out and bought a whole bunch of Carver luxury yachts after that.
You did? Yeah.
I
saw them. You had to get a couple of tractor trailers.
I had so many, I had them stacked up in the harbor. I mean, who can only have one?
No, at that point you can't.
But you're proving my point. All right, so valid.
Yeah,
right?
But there were some benefits to it. Was it perfect? No. Okay. Nothing's perfect.
So I would agree, we're heading into our first break pretty quick, but I would agree that there were some positives from it. And I think that bottom line is in corporate America, if it isn't profitable to be in business, you won't be in business. If you aren't in business, there are no jobs. Mm-hmm. There are no jobs. There is no local economy, right? So there are reasons that some of that is valid. However, if you look into all of the tax changes that were done by Reagan, really all of them were walked back. Very, very quickly. All of them were walked back with the exception of which one?
Well, you did some research.
The top income tax bracket, mm-hmm. which was slashed from 70%, which we all agree is obnoxious, down to
about 35, I think.
Right. I think it went as low as like 28 at one point.
Yeah.
Now, what was the cons? We got 1 minute, but think about that. One, the benefit to middle America disappeared. The benefit of the lower middle class really wasn't there. In fact, at one stat, they talked about the normal person. It was a $350 a year change by the time it was done. Middle class, about $3,500. Top tier, $350,000. That was the impact. But the impact then does relate to spending. So on the backside of our break, we're going to come back and keep on talking about Reagan, or trickonomics. That's not a bad word. Trickonomics. And we're going to talk about the impact on everybody. Come on back, Rational Revolution. It's Thursday. Revolution, it's the Beatles. And you know, you all want it. We want to be able to have a conversation about what's going on. Again, walking out, knocking on doors, talking to people in the community. What they want to do is get back to where we can just have conversations. And that's really what we try and do here. Tonight's conversation, we're talking Reagan, we're talking trickle down. A couple of comments here. Jim and Appleton, thanks for being here. He was sincere when he referred to his gentleman. He's a nice guy.
Yes, I appreciate that.
He also said the Reagan called supply side economics. We know that's true. His original plan was fine. However, it was hijacked and became trickle down. History is full of empires that have collapsed because of trickle down economics. And then we have a new name, Gretchen Kubeny. I hope I pronounced that properly. She says that Reagan trickled down your leg economies. It never trickled to the working class. He attacked the working class and unions. All valid. So let's go back to where we finished off. We finished off on the tax bracket. Really the only tax change that stayed in. Everything else was walked back. The only one that stayed in was the top down. Now, where I want to bring this back to spending. Because I think anytime you have a conversation about taxes, it's automatic that we should be talking about spending.
Absolutely.
So what is the impact of reducing the tax on the top, let's just call it 5%, the top 5%, if you reduced their tax burden by more than 50%, what would be the result of that?
Well, if nothing else changes, it's a reduction in, as the government likes to call it, revenue, but it's tax revenue.
Right.
But the reality is, and we talked about this too before, the reality in our country is that we do not have a taxation problem. We have a massive, massive spending problem.
But hold on now. Just no. Hold on. No. So if the spending were the biggest issue, then why didn't Reagan go after spending? He didn't. Instead, he went after taxes. And by the way, do you know, I mean, you read his book, you know, Ronald Reagan voted for FDR 4 times. He also said that he would never back out of the programs that FDR. Now, FDR is known as the president who probably increased spending the most of any president ever, right? The New Deal. And yet Reagan was the one that said he would never walk any of them back. That's
valid. Reagan was a Democrat.
He was a Democrat. And his famous comment is that he didn't leave the party left him.
Correct.
And it had to do with his escalation of income, pushing himself into the higher brackets and realizing that consequence. And I think that actually happens far more than we ever talk about.
It is.
Far more. All of a sudden, things that didn't affect you before affect you more as the income goes high.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to go back to is that back then, so again, we weren't talking about excessive government back then. We weren't really talking about that. It was all about taxes, the economy, all that kind of stuff. But if you take out, I don't know the number exactly, but I know that when he reduced that top bracket, we dropped, the amount of revenue coming in dropped to the lowest percentage of gross product revenue in history.
Mm-hmm.
So we literally went from, here's all the systems we have, we believe in the systems we have to take care of people, to we're now going to bring in less money. There's no way that that couldn't have had a negative effect. There's no way that you can't take out that revenue and say, there, we're still just as healthy today, unless you start taking stuff out. But again, too much government wasn't the issue then. Now, I'm going to add into that.
It still was.
Well, perhaps, but if that were the issue, that's not what he went after.
No.
He didn't go after that. There wasn't a big scream for anything. There was a scream for dropping taxes, which, again, we can agree there was a reality edge to it.
There's reality that you lose the tax revenue that's coming in, but the theory behind the supply side economics was, we'll bring that down, put more dollars into the system, and that will allow us to eventually generate more tax revenue because there's more spending going
We can talk theory all the time. I understand the economic tool, but in the reality, do you think, after all of this, that the working person, the theory was, open it up on top and it would flow all the way down and we all would feel better financially? Did that actually happen? Do you really think?
Not to the impact that we would have hoped it would have
happened. Not to the impact of anyone anybody at medium or lower. Isn't it fair to say that the trickle down did not come down there?
I can't say that.
Okay.
And I can't say that because, you know, not knowing the stats and obviously not being able to prepare and all that stuff.
All right.
But I would suggest that the people who had the money that maybe started more businesses may have created more jobs based on that. Now, can I prove that right now, sitting here the second?
I think it's valid to say
that. But that would have generated more income for people at the lower level. So it would have, in theory, trickled down to them.
I'll give you at least a half a point on that. I'll give you a half a point because it is true. If you make it easier for businesses to be in business, which was the deregulation.
Stay profitable.
If you allow them more freedom and there's more cash flow to use, they're more likely to create business that then does create jobs.
Correct.
I don't think that's actually wrong.
No.
Then I think that's your baseline. And from there, and then you add in, so that we agree on, right? But then you add in the concept of taking away the power from the unions, which in Reagan's case, it had to do with the flight controllers, because really the whole world was shut down because of it.
Right.
And it would be the equivalent of what if, you know, and I think, again, put yourself in the position, if all of the doctors in the country went on strike, what would that do to us? What if all the nurses went on strike?
Yeah, but I think there's a differentiating factor here in that air traffic control could shut down not just our economy, but the world economies.
So
because
again,
of flights in and out.
from the Republican perspective, concern for the economy outweighs the concern of human beings.
Safety.
Oh, that was a little bit of a low blow, but I heard it.
Safety.
Safety.
So it's the safety. It's the safety of the skies, right? Are you going to, you've got the people that are trained to do it, doing it. They can hold hostage the country as a whole from a safety standpoint, from an economy standpoint, from a, and if you shut
I think
that
it's
down,
a stretch. So I think it's a stretch.
So we'll go stretch it further. You can't get the heart transplant, you know, transported across country. You can't, you know, blood supplies.
I think you're stretching on this one.
I'm stretching a little bit, but the reality is there that because they were allowed to strike as a union, they really had a lot of control and power over the country.
All right, we're heading into our next break, but I think that it's fair to say that any time one side, and by that I mean corporate or workforce, if one side is given too much
control, power,
negative things come from that. Right?
I agree with that.
I think that's a fair statement. I think that if the economy was struggling to the point, if the taxes were to the point that it was almost impossible to be profitable, and labor continued to ask for more, that could become a negative situation that would force a worse situation if there were no jobs. And so I don't think that all things are bad when it comes to changing it. However, with the changes that went in, the labor power was minimized. The upside of corporate America was tremendously increased. And now we have an imbalance, in my opinion, and it's been this way for 25 years. We have a tremendous imbalance on the top side. So how do we look at that? We are heading into our second break. This one's a little longer. Get yourself a cocktail, maybe a bourbon, a glass of wine. We're not talking about alcohol, so I can just throw it in there.
You can.
Come on back on the back side of the break. This is Chris Alf. I'm Rational Revolution.
If you'd like to join the Rational Revolution and engage, download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. Choose your station, WGBW or WISS, and click on the text button in the lower right-hand corner. Looking at today's issues through a politically purple lens, this is the Rational Revolution. And once again, here's Chris Elfheim.
Well, welcome back to the wacky world of the Rational Revolution. I am here with my guest host, Mr. Dean Rash, here from DePere, and we are once again having a conversation that, you know, it seems like people are actually pretty interested. We got lots of text tonight. We're talking Reagan, we're talking taxes, we're talking trickle-down theory, and why some think of him as one of the greatest presidents ever, and some of the positive and negative consequences that came to that. And in general, I think just about every topic or every person, we could have that conversation, and this is a good one. So here's another comment. This one says, I have to say that there were a lot of jobs created during the Reagan administration in defense spending and aerospace. My first job was during that time, and they could hire people. I'm guessing they meant couldn't hire people fast enough. The problem was it was mostly funded by government contracts and not corporate trickle down. The 80s were definitely the corporate greed days. Valid. Right? It's valid. Again, we talk about costs. We talk about the top bracket was cut tremendously. Deregulation allowed corporations to do things. The positive effect of that was there were jobs created. Correct. There's no question. But the negative of that, now we're going to go back to and kind of tie this into the whole Gorbachev conversation. Defense spending. I did a little bit of research, you know, over the last couple of days. You know how I read mindlessly. And they were talking about the different presidents and who increased the spending the most and what were the causes of them. And the answers were all related to two things. They were either related to a huge chaotic situation in the United States, which could have been the Depression. It could have been the Great Recession. It could have been COVID. right? All three of those were major events that money had to be kicked to fix it from the government. Let's just leave that as it is.
Right.
And then the other answer was war. Mm-hmm. The other answer had to do with the Civil War, biggest spending. The World War One, huge spending. World War Two, huge spending. They were massive, massive, massive numbers. And that goes on through the Reagan years into all of them. So yes, you know, we can talk about the fact that the upper tax rate was cut, which did cause to a drop in revenue. But we also have had an increase and continue to have an increase on the defense budget, which leads us into, you know, we always talk, especially my red friends, will always talk about fiscal accountability, fiscal responsibility. But I don't think we ever talk about, there's never any accounting in the defense budget. Now, I will say my brother now has passed away, but my brother was a Marine, came out of the Marine, went to work as a defense contractor with Northrop Grumman. He earned a very good living doing such. So I do know that these businesses do well. But can we not agree, that going back to the Gorbachev conversation, if the number one spend is on defense, the defense of the people that you're in charge of, right?
Correct.
So if that's the case, then if the people inside of that country that you're trying so hard to protect are not living quality lives, isn't there an issue?
Well, there can be, and I'm not sure if you're referring to the Soviet Union at this point or if you're referring to the U.S.
Well, I think that it's okay to have that conversation and see how they relate.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. I actually got to listen to Gorbachev live via video one time at a conference. It was pretty cool. But if the reason that if you can't provide health care, if you can't assure housing, if you can't address the needs of the people who live in the country that the government is put in charge of, because the costs, what we're spending to defend it, are so high, there's a problem.
There is, but I think the issue that we have here, when we're bringing Gorbachev into this conversation now, is a look back at that time and the reality that we had two superpowers that were basically in a standoff.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan being Reagan, who he had kind of a good sense of people and understanding how people worked and understood them a little bit. And in the book I'm reading right now, there's actually a quote in there that he had a conversation with Gorbachev, and Gorbachev had said, you know, let's work on this together. And Reagan said, I can't work with you because I don't trust you. But I think that was a common theme between the U.S. and the Soviet Union at the time. But he also understood that the Soviet Union was struggling economically, and one way to force their hand was to really ramp up defense spending to make it look like we were gearing up for something.
But we did increase defense spending, and we've never cut it back.
And we did increase it, and by doing that, we forced the Soviet Union at the time to increase their spending, and we knew they didn't have the money for it.
Okay, but your line of thought is that we played chicken and won.
And we won.
Okay, but then that means we should be able to get the person off our backs and stop playing chicken.
But if you look at our world today, I think there's a lot of other people that are out there that kind of filled that void.
So in the end, it's okay for us to turn into the next Soviet Union? Is it okay for us to build our defense and spend so much on defense that we no longer care about education, we no longer care about healthcare? Is that really where we want to go?
But I think that is a completely false way of looking at the country that we have.
Is it though?
It is.
Okay.
I think our country is better than that.
Our country is great, but but not for everybody. And I think the problem is that a lot of people that are on microphones, like you and me, our life is pretty good. We have nice cars. We have good kids. We have clothes on our back. We can go buy anything we want when we want it. Mm-hmm. Life is good for us.
Yep.
And I think we are then guilty of not seeing that that is not actually reality. There are more people that are uncomfortable financially and socially than there are that are comfortable. And that's not the voice that's on the radio. That's not the voice that's on the TV, because we don't feel it. Therefore, it must not be that bad. And I think that's an error.
You know, I think I think we're oversimplifying the conversation.
And it still goes back to the whole trickle-down thing. Trickle, or I don't care what you want to call it, their version of trickle-down, and most people would understand that term. Yeah. The version of trickle-down, if that were the case, then if corporate, and I would love to see this, if corporate, I don't mind that corporations are, I'm a self-employed person. I need to be profitable, right?
Right.
So, but my issue is, at what cost? Mm-hmm. Where is the, if we agree that it's inappropriate for one side of the two-sided agreement to be outweighed, mm-hmm. if it's wrong for labor to have so much power that a business can't be successful, then why by default is it not wrong for a corporation to post 40% profit margins and never raise a wage? That's not right.
So my question, my brother and I have had this conversation a lot because we sit on the opposite side as well. And sometimes the opposite side of the
table. Have I mentioned how much I like your brother?
You have not.
I think you did,
and I just ignored it.
Yeah, probably.
But the point is that person sitting in that position today doesn't have to sit there tomorrow.
Which one?
The person who's sitting in the position that you just mentioned where they don't have this and they don't have that, they don't have to be in that position
tomorrow.
So
you're going with the bootstrap model. Is that what your plan is?
Absolutely.
All right, so I believed in the bootstrap model. That was very much in the Reagan era as well. I heard that, and I thought, what's the big deal? Work hard. Show up. Go do your thing.
Do your thing.
Yes,
show up. Work on time.
That sure sounds right, doesn't
Apply
it?
For job.
Because after all, that's what we could do.
Mm-hmm.
But
and a lot of people have done that.
And
that's
a lot
the
of people have. But that's not giving validity to the real struggles that exist mm-hmm. because of the situation we're in. And this has to do with again the separation of corporate profits went sky high, wages stayed stagnant, costs of goods go up. Right? We agree with that. So it's more expensive to be.
Right.
Our wages have stayed flat. Corporate profits are sky high. So now, again, we did the math a little bit last week. If you've got a family making $35,000 a year, I remember when I had $42 at the end of paying my bills per week.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it's not that long ago,
yeah,
right?
I agree.
So
done the same thing.
And we all have that thing. Well, back when we did it, no, because the world wasn't the same. My first house cost $50,000. $50,000. And I literally got my raise in cash so I could pay the down payment. So if your starter house now is at $200,000, because that's what it is,
mm-hmm.
$200,000. In fact, I literally buying a house right now, a rental property, and it's 1,083-ish square feet. And it was 209 or 211,000.
But I asked,
my very first house was the exact same size.
Mm-hmm.
It was a manufactured home, a Wausau home.
Sure.
And we paid $50,000 for it. Now, my point is, at $50,000, I could be making $35,000, still pay my babysitter, which cost me $2 an hour,
mm-hmm.
have a full-time job, and be profitable,
yep.
and grow and gain equity. And with that equity, I could roll that into another house, a bigger house, gain
right.
equity, and onward. When you don't have that beginning step available to you, if you cannot take step one, which is to have a house to start building capital, because after all, your down payment needs to be $40,000,
mm-hmm.
which no one has in non-qualified money.
Right.
If you can't get that first step, that means you can't get to the second step.
Right.
If your wages are stagnant at $15 an hour and childcare is going to cost you $1,000 a month and rent, because you don't have the down payment.
Childcare is not that cheap.
Maybe for one kid and I'm giving a slack. But yes, right? So this whole bootstrap concept from a distance,
mm-hmm.
I get that. And if we use the back in my day, I get that. But this isn't our day.
But we have people in this day that are doing that every day, are making it happen. You know, so I go back to, you know, why is it this way? We have seen in a lot of these situations, the housing market, for example,
mm-hmm.
you know, 08 and 09 when we had the crash.
Mm-hmm.
We had the tech bubble with it and then the crash of the housing market. It was because we started giving out loans that we shouldn't have given to people and they couldn't repay them, right? So the government got involved. They made a decision. They got involved. They started trying to fix the problem. And anytime the government fixes the problem, they make that pendulum swing hard
I like how you always like to blame the government for getting involved as opposed to the corporate greed that got us there to begin with. Can I just say that?
Well, the corporations just followed the government. And I'm sure the corporations
were
in bed together.
Just because you have this all the time. You say, well, it was legal, so therefore it's fine. If you don't like it, change the laws.
Right.
But if your team is the one who draws the lines, makes the laws, and now a company is now going to sell something to make money on that they know darn well is not good for anybody. So quit blaming the government for that. Mm-hmm. That is a corporate situation that people get sucked up and into. The mistakes are made. But I get tired of the blame the government for a problem that corporate greed actually caused.
But that's because corporate greed goes in place by the new rules that were created.
Who created the rules? Deregulation, which you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. is exactly how the financial crisis took place. Wouldn't you agree?
The financial crisis of 08 and 09?
The financial crisis with the mortgages came from deregulation all day long.
Subprime mortgages.
Right.
Giving loans to people that did not qualify.
Right.
Which was all government programs that were created to encourage people to get people into housing to help them achieve that.
2 minutes.
Well, get from step
you can
one
keep
to step
on
two.
Swinging, buddy. I'm not
I
buying
that
what
was
you're
under
selling.
The Clinton administration.
I think Clinton was guilty of deregulation in the bank industry, but who wanted him to do it? The bank industry.
Of course. That's what
right,
I said.
But
I just said that. I said they're in cahoots together.
They're in cahoots. I assure you, the ones that are making money on the deal are driving it. And no, I do not think that Clinton did everything. I think Clinton was absolutely part of that.
So where we connect on this is you got the corporate side, I got the government side, and together they were working on this together. So that's right. That's purple right there.
With that in mind, then we agree that money in politics is a bad idea.
Absolutely.
We agree on that. Fine.
No. Show's over, or are we having bourbon?
No, we're having bourbon. Jim from Appleton says, work hard. I'm 63. I've worked 70 hours a week for 40 years. Good Lord, Jim. What have I done wrong that I'm only able to make $27,000 a year now? Oh, Jim, that's a lot of... We got about
that's
1 minute.
There.
There's a lot to unpack on that one. But I guess my point in that, do not be guilty. I do not believe we should be guilty of... when I was a kid, I walked uphill both ways.
No, we all struggle.
We are doing that.
Right.
The world itself changes, mm-hmm. and the opportunity within that changes. It isn't like we used to have it, and
no.
we have to recognize that.
And we have
it's
to
not
adapt.
As simple as everything. Yes, we have to adapt, but in our thought processes, as we work through people that are in different situations, we ought to be having a little bit of empathy for the reality of today, not just, I did it, therefore you should. Wait, what's that in my ear?
It's music.
No, it's not music. That is Janis Joplin. My favorite bust out. We are heading into
that's
our
music.
Last break. Hey, it's Rational Revolution. Dean and I are going at it tonight on Reagan. If that's not fun, I don't know what is.
That's right.
Come on back on the other side.
Nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean, nothing, hon, if it ain't free.
Everybody to the Rational Revolution, where Dean and I are doing our very best to have a civilized conversation.
We're doing good.
I think we're doing fine. We picked a topic that, you know, Ronald Reagan and trickle-down economics and all that kind
push
of stuff.
Push my buttons with my favorite president.
I know. But you know what? Again, he's there's literally a statue of him down in the Fox Valley. I mean, he is just absolutely the favorite, the darling of the conservatives. And he's demonized by many of the Democratic side. And I think, again, our goal is to try and find, you know, the realities in that. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, I don't care who your favorite is. No president has done everything right.
No,
there is no such thing. There's no economic policy that is beneficial for everyone.
Yeah, they've all, I don't want to, fail is kind of a tough word for it, but they've all had their failures in attempting to create something that works for everybody. Right. It's not possible.
So we're sticking in this trickle-down conversation. And one thing about Dean and I are sitting here, all of a sudden we're heading into our last session. So I hope you enjoy these conversations. We do, again, they're meant to open up our minds a little bit and, you know, put a little bit of lightness with deep issues.
Mm-hmm.
But there are issues. The trickle-down concept, again, I've defended it. I have defended it from a perspective of if we don't have a business, we don't have a local economy.
Right.
We have no, so I do understand that. I understand one side cannot have too much power.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that those that offer the capital put their capital at risk as business owners do have a right to, in the end, have the advantage.
I agree.
Because they're the ones doing it. I don't think that's a wrong concept to say out loud. However, I do believe that we've gotten to a point where we have minimized without question, on a state level and a national level, we have minimized the strength of labor. We have done everything. I shouldn't say we. The Republican Party has very much openly done the best they could to take away that power. But at the same time, the power of corporate America, the tax structure, the deregulation, which still exists, mm-hmm. has, we have massive, massive, massive double-digit returns. And I don't like the fact that over the last 25 years, the corporate profits have gone sky high. Taxes have dropped less than half, and yet middle America has had almost no change. Almost no change in taxes and almost no change in income. And that's broken. That is the 25, well, actually, it's more than that. Reaganomics went in almost 40, right? So 40 years ago?
Would have been somewhere around 84, 85.
Right.
When you finally got that passed
right?
through.
So we're talking 40 years later. Mm-hmm. And we still basically are running the corporate structure and the tax brackets as they were set up back then. And middle America and low middle America are struggling because costs are up.
And you know there's a bigger picture to this too, because we've actually seen a massive increase in wages over the past couple of years with COVID and the money that got thrown into the system through stimulus.
Those are two different things, by the way.
But we had
to separate that.
But we also had massive inflation too, so that your buying power is just not there.
Sure, and massive inflation. I would say that part of it has the fact we were in for 12 years without settling down your interest rates, which is the natural tool to use mm-hmm. to settle down corporate profits. Right, you slow down by raising the interest rates. You're meant to slow it down. When you don't allow that to happen for 8 to 12 years, mm-hmm. you do not ratchet back the economy because, you know, you want your 401k package to look as good as it can. Eventually, that has to be corrected.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of the playing with the interest rates.
Well,
I mean, I think there's a balance.
The
to
interest
it.
Rate's been played with forever.
It has been, but I think right now we had to go to such an extreme with it because of what was happening. The economy was on fire because of the stimulus dollars.
The economy was on fire because we kept interest rates low forever and let the economy get overcooked. And the president at the time would not let the Fed adjust the rates. Why in heaven's name did we have 3% mortgage rates for as long as we did? Everybody know. Even the Realtors Association, I talked with them a few weeks back. Even they know that was wrong.
I know. And I don't want to get out of my mortgage rate right now because I'm in that.
Yeah, no kidding.
High
but the
threes.
Point is, we have the high interest rate because we allowed the low interest. The extreme mm-hmm. was not in the last 2 years. The extreme was in the decade before when the number was held artificially low for the good of corporate America. Nobody ever talks about that.
But I agree with that. I don't think it should have stayed
that.
Then
that ought to be talked about more often because had the prior administration done their job mm-hmm. and allowed.
Prior administrations, you said, right?
Sure.
Okay, because you said past decade.
I'm not going to argue. But again, if the market runs too hot, it's unhealthy hot. It's overvalued. Mm-hmm. It has to be settled down. Now, that makes people mad because 401k balance goes from X down to Y. Mm-hmm. But the reality is it probably should have been at Y to begin with because it was artificially high.
Right.
But now you have one entire party that's all they want to talk about. Mm-hmm. They want to talk about inflation and they want to talk about your 401k. Those two came out of the past decade plus of lack of action, not just the pandemic. And inflation, if we can agree that the interest rates were out of whack to begin with, that mm-hmm. had to be corrected. And then add in my favorite topic, corporate greed. Because you know the price gouging was going up. How is it that we had so many companies in the first quarter of a government shutdown of everything, that their profits went sky high? 40%. Are you kidding me?
It goes back to supply side economics as well, because we threw money into it with stimulus. People had money to spend, so products were in short supply, so prices go up. It's supply and demand.
Sure, except and then I would say add in our own individual greed.
Correct.
Inflation is supposed to slow us down from doing what we want to mm-hmm. allow the supply chain to
catch
up.
I agree.
Raise your hand if you stopped doing anything. Anyone?
You crossed your arms.
Did anyone not? Did we stop buying shoes?
No.
Did we stop going to Walmart?
No.
Did we stop doing anything?
No,
because we want to satisfy what we want on a daily basis.
There's a lot of us like you and I who probably said, I don't need this money, but I got it. I might as well do something.
Right. Is it true that inflation right now has slowed down people from buying homes and cars?
Absolutely.
Yes. Who has it hurt the most?
The lower buyer.
Absolutely.
Because the prices of houses skyrocketed over the past 3-4 years.
Well, we could also argue why the prices of house, because inventory is low.
Inventory is low.
Personally, because of corporate buyouts, which is a whole nother issue I'm talking about. But
you don't like corporations, do you?
I love happy, successful, symbiotic relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a place for that. Listen, we could go on. We're done for today.
Holy
but
smoke.
We, you know what? This is what this show is about.
Right.
It's about having a conversation that's complex, trying to figure it out. Jim is still fired up in Appleton. Carrie Ann in Appleton is still sipping her bourbon because we're talking about taxes again. But we do our best to have a good conversation. I appreciate your friend being here, Mr. Dean Rash, with me. We'll be back next week. Heaven knows what we'll talk about, but it ought to be entertaining. It ought to be educational, and we ought to find some new facts to it. Take care, everybody. See you next week.
But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? You know it's gonna be